Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the live issues program's post-episode recaps on live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
I was around 3 years old, a time when my parents were still figuring out how this brain of mine was working. I was sitting down with my sister, and she put on a film that many people would say made a mark on their childhood. That film was Jim Henson's Labyrinth. As most of you know this film, I won't go into the details about what it's about. It's practically etched into every living person's brain at this point. What the film did for me, for many kids back in the 80s, was introduce us to one of the most talented people on the planet. A man who sadly left this world of ours last week and has gone to the stars above where he belongs. David Bowie was the prime example of an icon. His music, fashion, film, activism, and philosophy has influenced billions of people throughout the globe. He made us smile, cry, love, hate, persevere, chuckle, and dared us to be different. Bowie showed the world that being the same as everyone would be dull and uninteresting. He was Ziggy Stardust, the Thin White Duke, Aladdin Sane, Jareth the Goblin King, and the man who fell to earth. David wrote for everyone, but in reality, he spoke for the alienated. He was the voice for those who were bullied, for those who were ridiculed and isolated from the societies of the norm. And the message to them was simple. Stay being you. Keep dressing like a weirdo. Aim for the stars. And become the artistic being you were born to showcase to the world around you. The first song I heard of his outside of the Labyrinth stuff was his collaboration with Queen, Under Pressure. And while it may be true that the song tends to be overused these days in indie films and such, you still cannot deny the fact that it was a very powerful duet between Bowie and Freddie Mercury. I then heard Let's Dance, Space Oddity, Changes, Fame, Cat People, Suffrage City, and one of my personal favorites of his, I'm Afraid of Americans. He brought a new style to Iggy Pop with his work on the albums The Idiot and Lust for Life, and even lent a hand in the title track of Arcade Fire's recent album, Reflector. I'll admit, I was very fond of his later work, especially the music on Earthling, Reality, and The Next Day. In fact, Reality is probably my favorite record of his, but I know that some may say Heroes, Diamond Dogs, or Hunky Dory were his best works, but from my perspective, Reality was my favorite because it meshed all of his styles together into one solid, flowing record. It's weird talking about another icon passing just a couple weeks after we said farewell to Motorhead's Lemmy Kilmister, both of whom had gone down on very similar circumstances. People who we claimed to have been immortal, musicians who we thought would be around forever, even after the dust settles, gone in an instant. It's a lesson learned that the gods of our generation must need to rest once their work has been completed. Still, both Lemmy and Bowie have left Earth. The good ones are taken from us too early, while the garbage of the world still roams this dreary land of ours. However, let's not think of the bad things in this world. Bowie would never want us to do that. Instead, find the good. Search for that one flower in a garden of weeds, the butterfly flowing freely past a spider's nest, and the clownfish in the shark's tank. Do what Bowie wanted the world to do. Dance to your wildest desires. Reach out to the galaxy above. And continue being the best you could possibly be. If we can do that, then I'm sure that wherever Bowie is now, he'll be smiling as much as we are when one of his songs hits the airwaves. So, instead of opening the show with our usual theme song, we're going to open it up with what many people say is his farewell message to all of us. This song appears on his final album, Black Star, released on his 69th birthday this year on January 8th, and 2 days before he left us. Here now is David Bowie with Lazarus. Welcome to No Borders, No Race.
Scars that can't be seen. I've got drama, can't be stolen. Everybody knows me now.
Yeah.
From 2005's Awake album, that was Lock on Ciel with Lost Heaven. Lock on Ciel recently unleashed a new single this past Christmas entitled Wings Flap, so be sure to get your hands on that if you can. Joining us now is the producer over at Big Pixel Studios, who are responsible for the likes of Exit Through the Dungeon, Meow Meow Happy Fight, Mega Coin Squad, and the recent 16-bit inspired side-scrollers for Thor, Captain America, and the Avengers. This week, they reunite with the Rick and Morty team for their follow-up to Jerry's Game, a Pokemon-inspired RPG called Pocket Mortys. It's awesome, lots of fun, and just plain squanch. Please welcome Mr. Dave Burpitt.
Hi, thanks a lot. How you doing, Evan?
I'm doing very good. How are you doing over there?
Yeah, I'm great, thanks. We're over in London here.
Yes, it sounds jolly good over there. Oh, sorry about
sure
that.
Sure is.
Sorry. Couldn't resist. So first off, just as I've asked other developers in the past, tell us about Big Pixel Studios. How did it all start for you guys?
Sure. I mean, we started back in 2009. At the time, the three founders of the studio made up the internal online games team at Disney over here in London offices. And at the time in 2009, you know, mobile gaming started to pick up a lot with the iPhone and the launch of the App Store. And we just saw an opportunity there to sort of, you know, start our own studio and start making games for mobile. So that's why we started.
Awesome. So, as I mentioned, this is your second collaboration with the Rick and Morty team. After the comedic success of Jerry's Game, did you guys have an idea of what could be done next with that universe?
I think the thing that we learned from Jerry's Game is that we could have a lot of fun with Rick and Morty without the fans taking things too seriously.
Right.
You know, it's a pretty stupid game, and we didn't know whether people were going to get it or not. Like, it is completely pointless. Mm-hmm. And yet, it was just great. The feedback was great. You know, the Rick and Morty fans are hugely dedicated, but they can always see the funny side to what we're trying to achieve. So it kind of just opened up the floodgates to let's just do something really stupid.
Right. And that's what I liked about Jerry's Game. It's one of those total time wasters. You literally don't need to use your brain at all while playing it. And what I kind of found funny too is, like, you have the option, you know, to pay in advance to unlock everything. But what I found funny is it costs more to unlock everything than it is to actually earn to do it.
Yeah, the whole thing is just a satire take, you know, and there wasn't really a huge amount of thought into how things worked. It was just, you know, let's just, you know, get the stupidest, simplest concept that we can together and just fill it up with some random stuff.
Right, because that's kind of the joke, because as people who watch Rick and Morty know, Jerry is very much a simpleton, despite him thinking that he is the smartest guy in the world, even though he really isn't. But that's what makes it really fun, because you get to be Jerry and just get to realize how mundane and pointless his existence really is while we play Jerry's Game.
Yeah, you need to play it while having breakfast, you know, just before work. Really, to get the feel of being Jerry, you know.
Exactly.
Or so, maybe not. Well, he doesn't have a job anyway, so.
Right, yeah. That too. Yeah, he got fired from that ad agency.
Yeah.
So, were there any other game ideas before you decided upon the Pocket Mortys concept?
Usually, you know, when we approach something like this, we brainstorm a ton of ideas, and then we slowly narrow it down and narrow it down. Weirdly for this, the idea of Pocket Mortys, or the real sort of rough idea of it anyway, came really early on. It must have been one of the first ideas that popped up, and we just fell in love with it so much that we just spent a lot of time just redefining it and trying to figure out how we can make this universe work. And, you know, you collecting lots of Mortys, or, you know, lots of Ricks, and we went through a lot of iterations of how it would work before we ended up on the idea that it's just going to be Mortys battling Mortys. But yeah, we just loved the sort of idea of it so much that we didn't really go and find any other ideas to work with.
Now, I know you kind of already answered this a little bit, but Pocket Mortys, of course, pays homage to the Pokemon series. But what were, like, some of the elements of Game Freak's popular series that made it a great fit for the world of Rick and Morty?
You know, Pokemon is just awesome series, and I'm sure it's obvious that we're huge fans. We wanted to do something with Rick and Morty's, a lot to do with the art style. You know, we wanted it to feel like a video game rather than an episode. So, you know, when playing with the characters and the look and feel of what, you know, Rick and Morty's would look like in the world, a lot of things just fell into place for how we wanted it to look and work. Yeah, and also just the idea that there's this unlimited amount of Rick and Morty's, you know, that opens up so many ideas and opportunities to do fun stuff. You know, there's not many games out there where you can just say, oh, well, we'll take a lead character and you can just have an infinite amount of him, but all with slight variations.
Right, right. So if Rick Sanchez is Ash Ketchum, who would be the Gary Oak in the Rick and Morty world?
It's a good question. We've been thinking about this. I guess Mysterious Rick plays a pretty big part in the game, although it might not be obvious from the outset. You know, he's a bit of a double crosser, and he's definitely after something that you've got. So I guess Mysterious Rick would be my answer to that.
You see, when I look at Mysterious Rick, I get more of a Team Rocket vibe from him than a Gary Oak one.
Yeah, I get that as well.
So, how much input did Justin and Dan have in regards to the creation of Pocket Morty's? Like, what kind of, like, notes did he send you guys?
They're just fantastic to work with. You know, we sent them the initial concept, and they loved it. Obviously, we'd already worked with them on Jerry's Game to some extent. So, you know, they really liked the idea, and they gave us pretty much full reign to do what we want, which was awesome and also, you know, terrifying, because while we were developing it, we were watching Series 2 unfold along with everybody else. So,
yeah,
you know, a lot of things were changing. We were wondering, you know, can we put this character in? What's going to happen to this character? And then new characters would pop up. So, yeah, we did get a lot of feedback from them. And, you know, Justin's a huge gamer, and he really knows his stuff. You know, so between him and the guys at Adult Swim, we had a real strong team to rely on for feedback and ideas.
Now, the game references greatly to the episode Close Encounters of the Rick Kind. As Rick and Morty play with the concept of infinite universes, that'd mean infinite possibilities for different kinds of both Ricks and Mortys. As anything goes with what these universes pertain, where do you begin in regards to what kinds of Ricks and Mortys are featured in Pocket Mortys?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a strange one, because there's a lot of humor to just having real mundane Rick and Mortys, you know, like, you know, Rick with a spoon or Rick with a fork or bold, you know, or sorry, they're Mortys, but they're like bold Rick. And then you can go full on out like Cronenbergs and you know, some really weird like ghosts and stuff like that. So, you know, it's just the fact that there's a limitless amount that you can do with that. So we kind of started off with watching the show. Obviously, we were fans of the show anyway, but we went through and watched again everything that we could get our hands on and made lists and screenshots of all the various Ricks and Mortys that you see, and then, you know, tried to see which ones of those would work in the game, and then we just let loose and just tried to think of you know, some wild and wildly mundane versions of them.
Now, I know you might have revealed this on another website or a podcast show, but how many different Ricks and Mortys are in this game?
There are a lot. I'm not going to give you an exact number to that, but there are nearly too many to count, really. And also trainers as well. It's not just Ricks and Mortys. There's just a lot of characters in this game.
Yeah.
But you just have to play it and find them. And people started making guides for it already in Wikipedia. So yeah, it's great to see. I think, you know, eventually everything will be uncovered, but it's not for me to tell you, unfortunately.
That's true. So for our listeners, be sure to play the game so you can figure out which Ricks and Mortys you discover. So my question then is, do you have a favorite Rick and Morty combo in Pocket Mortys?
I don't know about combo, because the way it works is, you know, some bricks have lots of mortars, so
right.
there's a lot of trading between dimensions going on, and yeah, a lot of separation. But I think my favorite multi would have to be Spoon Multi, just because he's so stupid. And the idea that everyone in his dimension, you know, just walk around with a spoon constantly. Yeah, I think he's my favorite multi. And yeah, as for Rick's, I don't know, there's so many to choose from. I think I like Miami Rick. I think he's got really cool sunglasses. So yeah, I'll probably go for him.
Nice. So were there any kinds of Rick and Mortys that didn't make the cut, or even alternate universes? And can we expect them to see him in Pocket Morty's Gold and Silver editions?
I think it's a bit early to be talking about Gold and Silver editions, but, you know, there's obviously a lot of things we could do with this, and we've got a lot of great ideas as well. You know, just not just content, but features and all sorts. So we'll just have to see what happens. Yeah, and also, you know, if the, you know, people giving their suggestions on Twitter and Facebook and Reddit and wherever else, you know, we're pouring through all this, and we're trying to keep up, you know, making our own notes and seeing what people want. So I'd really push people to go out there and try and think up what they'd like to see in the game.
Has there been a fan suggestion that has stood out for you so far?
There's been some really good multis, and the fan artwork is unbelievable. I mean, if you go on Tumblr and just search for Pocket Multis, there's some real great artwork going on. So yeah, there are a few things, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Now, what I love about Pocket Mortys is, instead of the water type, leaf type, fire type, any other types, you rather went with the more simple rock, paper, scissors route as to which Morty may be able to defeat the other one with better ease. What made you decide to go this route in regards to how technique and how to battle perfectly in this game?
Yeah, I think, again, it comes down to, like, we didn't want it to be too serious. You know, it should be funny, you should see these things, and it should put a smile on your face. The fact that it's just so mundane, rock, paper, scissors, everyone gets it, we don't have to go into huge depth of how that works. It just seemed like the sort of the simplest way to get these types across and to mix up the tactics a little too. You know, so it does pay dividends to use the right type mortars when you can.
Now, was there something that you guys over at Big Pixel Studios were able to come up with in Pocket Mortys that surprised the creators of the show? Like, something that they themselves wish they had come up with?
You'd have to ask them, to be honest. You know, there's a lot of there was some communication between us, and, you know, obviously a lot of ideas back and forth, and a lot of stuff they loved. There was also a lot of bad language in the email, so I can't really repeat all of it. But yeah, I think they really liked it. They, you know, they wouldn't have you know, put this out there if they didn't love it.
Right. So, what sort of advice can you give to our listeners in regards to training your Mortys properly?
I think keeping a balanced team is a good thing to aim for. So, you know, don't leave a good Morty behind. Make sure you balance him up and level him up, you know, whether it's through seeds that you can win and buy with your Schmeckles, or just bring him out every match, just bring him out for a couple of hits and take him back in, and he will gain XP through that. And the other thing is making good use of the combining options. If you go to Morty Daycare, you can combine two of the same multis to create the next evolution. And you can create some really cool multis there with some good stats. So, yeah, they're the two bits of advice I'd give.
I think that is some great advice for our listeners who are just about to jump into Pocket Mortys. But for those listeners who haven't jumped into the game yet, why should people play Pocket Mortys, besides the fact that it's a free game with Rick and Morty in it?
Yeah, I don't know what else to say. You know, it's free. It's got Rick and Morty. I think it makes every other game look like Jerry's game. So you should go out and play it.
Dave, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders Erased. Pocket Mori's available on iOS and Android devices. It's free. Please do check it out. But Dave, for our listeners, where can people find more information on Big Pixel Studios?
The best place is probably on Twitter. That's where we're most active. So it's just at Big Pixel Studios. And you can check out all of our games. We've got Mega Coin Squad out, which is our latest own release on PS4, Xbox One, and Steam. So you can find that on our website, bigpixelstudios.co.uk.
Excellent. Now, if you don't mind me asking, do you guys have anything else coming up in the not-too-distant future?
Well, we're not just going to sit back and put our feet up. You know, we've released a lot of games since we started in 2009, and we've got stacks of ideas. So, yeah, there will be more coming from us for sure.
Excellent. Dave, thank you again for joining me here, and I'm looking forward to jumping more into Pocket Mortys and to see what you guys are going to be doing in the near future.
That's great. Thanks a lot, Evan. Cheers.
Not a problem. Coming up next, we've got a new song from our friends Hunter Valentine, who will be releasing a new EP called The Pledge very, very soon. This is the leading single off the record, and it's called Blackout Nights.
So far from gone, I can't deal with these people. It won't be long until my far from grace. Is this right from wrong? I'm cut from the wrong cloth. I must be strong. Hands up, side from this place. Save me, I need an escape. If you can't stand the weight of killing off this pain, shadows of gray. I can't see things so clearly, this twisted game. A constant losing streak. Save me, I need an escape. I'll make my mark and watch the decay. I'm not gonna let this happen again. These blacked out nights are my best. Save me, I need an escape.
2008 album Vandals Bop. That was Essay or Samurai Attack with Drive the Night Away. On January 20th, the band will be releasing their first album in 5 years entitled Hello Goodbye. So hopefully we'll spend something from that sometime in the near future. A couple weeks ago, Oculus revealed their price point and release date for the hotly anticipated VR headset, the Rift. Coming to us on March 28th, the Rift will include the headset, sensor, remote cables, an Xbox One controller, and the two games Eve Valkyrie and Lucky's Tale. As for the price point, it was announced that it had cost $599 on launch. Now, I do understand that there are a lot of people out there that may think that $600 is a lot of money for a VR set, and in regards to the average consumer, it is. However, $600 for new technology, a kind of technology that has never been released to the general public outside of beta usage or Kickstarter early backers, $600 is kind of a bargain, to be honest with you. Okay, let me explain. Usually, when new technology is released to the public, people can be expected to pay thousands of dollars for it. Look how much curved LED TVs cost now, as it's currently a new and fresh product. The cheapest ones can go for $2,000, whereas the most expensive, which, from my research, is Samsung's 88-inch 4K SUHD TV, goes for $20,000. Back in 1999, when flat plasma TVs were first brought to the market, they cost at least $10,000, which, adjusted for inflation, would be $15,000 by today's standards. One final number. When Nintendo unleashed the NES, it cost $299, which would be around $660 if it was released today. Therefore, with all these examples of technology laid out for you, I can honestly say that $600 for the Oculus Rift isn't as bad as it could have been. Okay, so if you have a much older computer, then the Rift probably won't work with it, which would mean having to buy a new PC to play it. Now, fortunately, the Oculus site has a free program that tells you if your PC is compatible before you purchase it, which means you won't have to deal with a frustrating and expensive kerfuffle. So if you can't afford it, you can easily wait for the price to go down a year from now. And if you can't afford it but don't have a good enough PC, then use the money you were going to use for the Rift to update said PC, and then if you still want the Rift, just save up for it again. It's fairly easy financial science if you think about it. Now, I say all this because I've been championing the Oculus Rift since I first played with it at E3 2013. It's awesome technology, and I hope to see it succeed. Now, I'm not telling everyone to run out and buy it, but if you want to get your VR on and you have the cash and right PC for it, then by all means, go for it. You'll be getting two games with it after all, so it's like paying... You know what? I've done enough number throwing here. Let me just recap. Some are okay with the $600 price tag, others aren't. I understand the concerns and resistance from both sides, and I have personally chosen which one I align myself with. And if you would like to share your thoughts on the Rift, be it the price tag or the tech itself, write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com with the subject line Rift Talk. We'll hopefully read the best responses on a future episode. And now let us return to this week's playlist. Here are the crazy metal pop trio known as Lady Baby with a brand new single. Let's hope an album is on the horizon. This song is called Agi Agi Money Ochingin Dai Sakusen.
Let's go.
Favorite bands of all time. That was Louis XIV with Air Traffic Control from 2008's Slick Dogs and Ponies record. Whenever I hear this song, I get this vibe from it. Like, it's a sort of spiritual successor to Bowie's Space Oddity. A happy ending for Major Tom, I like to think. And it's funny because their guitarist, Brian Karsig, told me that the song was actually inspired by a couple chords from Radiohead's Karma Police. Now, another reason why I spun Louis XIV was because the band had the privilege of being Bowie's final opening act. They didn't know it would be his final gig. No one knew. But Louis XIV was invited to open for him at a Keep a Child Alive benefit show in New York City. Bowie chose Louis XIV because they were one of his favorite up-and-comers, and to be seen as a favorite band in the eyes of the Thin White Duke, I can't imagine what sort of cool feeling that must have been. Joining me right now is my good buddy, Phil, the Issues Guy from Phil's Recap and Reviews.
Thank you, King Baby Duck. It's always a pleasure to be able to come here and join you on the podcast, and I'm excited to talk about our picks for the Oscars today.
Yes, the Oscar nominations are here, and some surprising choices that were nominated, and I've got to say, there are a lot of snubs that I've come across this year.
When we get to some of our picks, I will definitely mention the people I think should be nominated in those categories, but I think I can basically sum it up right at the beginning with a couple of big ones, or my biggest one, Michael B. Jordan for Creed. I thought he was exceptional in that movie.
Yes, absolutely. I was very shocked that he wasn't nominated for Best Actor in that.
Yeah, that was kind of shocking to me. So that is one that just immediately when I was looking at the list stood out to me, and I think Creed probably should have got a little bit more love. And the other big one for me, just because of my taste in movies and what my favorite movies of the year would be Straight Out of Compton for Best Picture. That was one of the most enjoying times I had in the cinema experience this year, and that holds a lot of weight to me when I judge something as best movie. I think that movie was a victim of when it came out, and by the time we get to Oscar time, quote unquote, when the movies that usually immediately get nominated, or that certain window, I think a movie like Straight Outta Compton got lost in the shuffle. But I'm sure
I know how you feel about that, because that's how I felt back in, I want to say, the 2011, 2012, when my pick for like that movie of that year, Drive, was only nominated for one like Oscar for sound mixing. That was like a film that I saw as a best picture contender.
Exactly. And in this case, Straight Outta Compton is nominated. I believe it's for best original screenplay.
Right.
But that is the only nomination that I thought. And another, and just last one, of course, I think maybe Ridley Scott deserved some love this year, and Quentin Tarantino deserves some love in the director spot. But whatever.
Yep. So you mentioned Best Original Screenplay. Let's jump into that. We're scrolling from the bottom of the website all the way up to the top. Best Original Screenplay. We have Straight Outta Compton, but we also have Bridge of Spies, Ex Machina, Inside Out, and Spotlight.
I think for my pick on this one, just simply because of the lack of other representation of this movie, this is a very difficult one for me, because Bridge of Spies was very immaculately written, and I thought Spotlight was excellent as well. But really, I'm doing it. This is because another bullshit thing that an animated movie can't be nominated for Best Picture of the Year. I'm going with Inside Out.
You know what? I'm actually going to be going with Inside Out, too. I thought this was Pixar's best work since The Incredibles, and just the way that the story was told, especially the whole humanistic aspect of the main girl character when you saw her outside and how her emotions were being affected from both the outer world and from what was happening inside of her head. I thought it was very brilliant how they did that.
Excellently said, King. And it's just one of those cases, again, that to repeat what I just said, because I want to make sure it's a big point. I think that is, it should be in the discussion for best movie of the year. I think it got its animated bias that it didn't get nominated for Best Picture of the Year. I think as a movie, and most of the critics out there, the ones that I actually listen to and the ones that have something to say, they all agree too. It was one of the best movies of the year, and it's a shame that it's not nominated for Best Picture, to be honest.
Agreed. And I'm sure we'll get to that like a little bit closer to like when we talk about Best Animated Feature.
Exactly.
So let's move up this list. Best Writing for Adapted Screenplay, we have The Big Short, Brooklyn, Carol, The Martian, and Room. And for me, I was just blown away by the writing in The Martian. I thought they did an amazing job with this film, and their ability to like really mix up the drama and the comedy. Like when The Martian won for best comedy this past week for the Golden Globe, I actually thought, you know, it is kind of an appropriate category to put it in, because there is a lot of really funny shit that happens in The Martian.
I agree. And I think it's one of those cases where, being a big fan of Game of Thrones, when something is both good in the source material and good in a visual medium, but in different ways. And I think I personally didn't read the book, but I've talked to a lot of people that have and say that they're both good in different ways. And I think they did an excellent job of transitioning that into an on-screen thing. And I agree with you. It was a really funny movie. this might seem like a weird pick, but I have to... I enjoyed the hell out of a lot of the movies in this category. The Big Short was something that I liked a lot and had a good time with. But I have to give this to one of my surprise movies of the year for me of how much I actually enjoyed it, and that was Brooklyn.
Really? Because that's like the only film I've seen here I've never heard of.
I just really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the pacing. I enjoy movies like that. It's definitely not for everybody, and the style in which it's depicted, rhyming and in that style, in sort of a remake in the way Baz Luhrmann remade Romeo and Juliet. So my pick for adapted screenplay, I guess I have to agree with you. I have to go with The Martian, because out of all the list of this movies, they're actually the movies I think they are. cut source material for this one. I have to give it to the Martian. I just had a hell of a lot of good times with this movie, and I agree with you, King. It was a hilarious movie, and it may not be a straight comedy, but I don't think comedy is something you can describe in black and white terms, in the sense that there's only one way to create a comedy. Does a movie make you laugh? Then it's funny. Is it meant to make you laugh? It's a comedy. But I agree with you on this one, King, The Martian.
Okay. So here's a tough one. Visual effects, because these are five films that I think all really deserve this award. You got Ex Machina, Mad Max Fury Road, The Martian, The Revenant, and, of course, Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Oh my gosh. This is a difficult one for me, really, because I think... as much as I love Star Wars The Force Awakens, and I think a lot of the visual effects worked extremely well with the integration of practical effects with some of the CG stuff they did, one of the few points that I agree with a lot of the hardcore criticism of the movie, especially from some of the people I did my yearly recap with and one of my co-hosts from my show, they hated Snoke. They hated the design of Snoke. They hated everything about him. They called him Darth Gollum. They really didn't like it. A lot of people thought that was derivative and stretch of a better word. Where Mad Max was just so freaking creative, and there's no disputing that. And I think it shouldn't necessarily be, in my mind, in some of these other category that it's in. I think in a lot of these points, like visual effects, the way it all came together, I think I have to give it to Mad Max here.
You see, I would give it to Mad Max Fury Road, but when you look at what they did with Ex Machina, with the character of Ava,
good.
In this movie, she's like the robot, but with the human face. It literally looks like she is a robot. It's not CGI or anything. What they were able to accomplish in that film, it's mind-blowing what they were able to do.
Absolutely. I can't argue with that. It was really visually incredible what they did with it. I think the easy pick that a lot of people are going to go to with the Star Wars here, but I don't think it deserves it in that award. And I think this is definitely either Ex Machina or Mad Max for me.
Okay. So, a similar award, sound mixing, same nominations, except instead of Ex Machina, it's Bridge of Spies.
This one I go to give to Star Wars.
Okay, I would give it to Star Wars as well.
This is the Star Wars award of the night to me. I know it's in maybe one other category. What did it get? Four nominations? We'll get to it. But this is the definite one for me. I think the way they mix the sound, the way it really brought you into Star Wars. And I know that's almost, you could think it's shooting fish in a barrel. That, oh yeah, all you have to do is use the Star Wars sound effects, blah, blah, blah. And everyone's going to go, yay! But I thought that was one of the more, why I don't think the film editing was the best, and we're going to get to that in a second.
Yes.
I do think from a sound mixing, and I agree with what some people say about sound design with John Williams, and we'll get to that too. But for mixing, I think Star Wars.
Same here. Because when you watch this film, you know, it's not just sounding like Star Wars. It's making it feel like you're there while watching Star Wars. And when you're hearing the pew, 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 it's just going right past your eardrums. It makes you feel like you're right there in the middle of the action.
Exactly. And it really does, in that sense that it fills you, and especially when you see it in those amazing theaters where it fills you 360 degrees around you, you just are transformed into the Star Wars universe. And that's just, we can harp on the prequels forever in our lives on how what they didn't do right, but I think that is one aspect that they didn't quite get right. It was more, hey, we got Star Wars sound effects, yay, be happy. There was actually some art and some thought going into the way this sound was mixed, and I think maybe now, knowing a little bit more about the story and knowing how much that they did cut from the movie, I think you have to give credit to the sound for really push the sound mixing for really pushing the narrative of this story.
Absolutely. All right, so the next category, sound editing, same nominations as before, only instead of Bridge of Spies, we have a movie called Sicario. Not quite familiar with that one. And for me, I'm going with Mad Max Fury Road for best sound editing, especially when you got something that just sounds as powerful as a guy with a flaming guitar just riding through.
It's tough for me to argue with that one. Part of me wants to give some love to The Revenant just because of how tense it was set up with the sound mixing, but I can't ignore Mad Max. It's just not as fresh in my mind. I have to give it to Mad Max.
Yeah, same here. Absolutely. All right, best short film live action. Who cares about that? None of us have seen that. And same deal with animated short film.
Well, have you seen the animated shorts when it really comes down to it? Because you were a little bit more of a connoisseur.
Nope, I've never seen any of these. Although I love Don Hertzfeldt. I think he's an amazing animator. So I'll give World of Tomorrow my nomination for best animated short film.
And I'll go with you because I'll cater to your expertise in this area. Okay.
Yeah, Don Hertzfeldt, a very underrated animator. If you have Netflix, be sure to search for him. There's a couple films by him that you would definitely enjoy. Mm-hmm. Okay, production design. We've got Bridge of Spies, The Danish Girl, Mad Max Fury Road, The Martian, and The Revenant. I was going to stop at Mad Max Fury Road because that was just incredible what they were able to do from a production standard.
I have to say, in full disclosure here, I've seen The Revenant, I've seen The Martian, I've seen Mad Max. I have not seen The Danish Girl, and I have seen Bridge of Spies. So I don't know, I can't speak for The Danish Girl, but of all of these on the list, it's hard to look past all the little touches of production that went into creating what Mad Max was. Again, I don't think, and we'll get to it, even though we're glorifying it, I think, I'm not sure if I would have put it in for contention of best movie of the year, but that's just my opinion. But I think it's one of the best produced, tightly woven movies ever. So maybe I'm talking myself into it. It's really beautifully done.
It is very beautifully done. Just that whole hardcore look to it. Just pure badassery. Not to mention the whole desert outlook of the whole world of Fury Road as the whole chase is happening.
Yeah. And the way they used color and the way that they used color just to create the sense of desperation, the sense of where you were, it really did something that this might be blasphemous to say because it's the only Mad Max movie I love. I don't love the other ones. Sorry, fuck me in the ass and punch me in the gut and throw me down and say, you don't like Mel. I do like Mel. I like a lot of Mel Gibson's movies. I never was into Mad Max for whatever reason. And this is my favorite Mad Max. This got me into it. I'm like, holy shit, now I go back and watch those and I enjoy them more.
Exactly. Absolutely. And I feel like that it all like just... It just built up the whole mythos more of Mad Max because of Fury Road. And you made mention of the colors. There's an interesting tidbit where director George Miller almost released this film in black and white.
Ooh, interesting.
So imagine how different of a feel it would have been if he had initially
did that. I like that idea, but I'm glad they didn't do it.
Yeah. If you want to watch it in black and white, all you do is just turn the color off on your TV.
Hey, fucking man. I mean, that's all you need to do. I mean, I get some movies that do it for either period pieces, or some movies do it for stylistic choices when it works, or to save money, or whatever reason. I think something like Clerks works really well in black and white, and I think Kevin Smith made the right decision in that moment to shoot that in the way that he did.
Exactly.
But I don't think everything always works in it. And obviously movies like Pleasantville or things that use it as a dynamic in the movie or...
Right, something like The Artist or Sin City, films like that.
But movies that just do it, I'm glad that they chose not to do this. And another example, what keeps popping in my head, even though it's not a movie, is that because of the way the comics were, the graphic novel, the first episode of the Walking Dead, before they initially produced it, Frank Darabont really thought about doing it in black and white. And the network argued against it. And I'm glad that they didn't. I'm glad that they did it color.
Right.
I've seen it in black and white. They've done that for a special. Like, we're going to show it in black and white. And it's good for a trick. But like King was saying, with any movie you want to do, you can just turn the color off.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's just a very simple setting. Yeah, you can even make a pre-setting for it, just in case, if you want to do it for everything you want to watch.
It's not that difficult. You can even play your video games in black and white.
I don't recommend it, but you could.
No, you could.
Yeah. Okay, so music original song. And I'm looking through these songs, and I'm like, really? These were the best ones they could choose?
Dude, I was with you on that one. I couldn't. I was having trouble. This, when I was looking through everything, this was one of my tougher ones to even make a pick.
Yeah, because I look at this. They actually nominated the Sam Smith song from Spectre, Writings on the Wall. And everybody across the board hated that song. Yeah.
50 Shades of Mother Effin' Grey got a nomination in the Oscars. What the bloody hell face crap. It shouldn't even have its name mentioned in an award. This is why people think your award show is bullshit. Because you nominate things like 50 Shades of Grey for anything.
Right.
It's one of the worst movies. It should win every Razzie. And it's going to ultimately not get an award, but it's going to have its name said at the goddamn Oscars.
I feel like whoever's reading the nomination should like throw up in their mouth. When they say 50 Shades of Grey, and the nominees are Earn It from 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the only thing I have to go for in this category is I got to give it to, just because I'm on my all-time high on this person, I guess I have to give it to Lady Gaga.
I do too. I like Lady Gaga.
I like Lady Gaga, and I want her to get a Globe and an Oscar. I want her to do it. And I think she did a decent enough job in American Horror Story, especially even though she didn't replace the character coming in after such a great actress's departure and having to fill really big roles on that show. And she does a decent enough job, and she's really bearing it all on that show this season. So if you ever want to know what Lady Gaga looks like without clothes on, just turn on American Horror Story this season. But she's, for a non-actress and so many great actors, whatever you think of that show, there's a lot of good actors working on it. And she holds her own there when she doesn't have to talk too much.
Right.
Her biggest problem is she has an inconsistent accent going on in the show. But Halle Berry had that in the X-Men movies, and people forgave her for years.
Yeah.
So you're doing okay, Lady Gaga, and this is your first time to bat. If a couple more years, you might actually do some good acting work if you put your time to it. So she showed me something. So I know this isn't an acting award, but because of that reason, just to make her feel good about herself, I'm giving it to Lady Gaga.
I'm giving it to her too, for Till It Happens to You from The Hunting Ground.
Yep.
All right, so original score, we got Bridges
Spy.
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah, no, you know what? Fuck it. Let's not read it. Hateful Eight, hands down.
Yes. The only thing I have to say about this one, King, is that as much as John Williams has been nominated more than Meryl Streep for Oscars, and as much as I think he did a decent job in Star Wars Force Awakens, the things that are most memorable from a sound standpoint for that are the reuses of old Star Wars themes.
Yep.
I think some of the newer music that he created for some of our characters is not as memorable. I think if we're going to rank all the Star Wars movies for John Williams performances doing original score for, this would be near the bottom of the list for his sound design. I would say Phantom Menace would be pretty good. I mean, as much as I hate Phantom Menace, in some ways, his score in that movie is exceptional.
Yeah, it is great. It's like the only good thing about the movie.
It's the only good thing about the movie and about all those prequels. I think his score in all three of those prequels are fucking ridiculous. So I'm looking forward to see what he'll do in the next movie, but I think this one was a little... He kind of mailed this one in a little bit.
A little bit. But The Hateful Eight. Oh. Now, I went into this film. I saw the whole Roadshow version. And I knew, like, right when I was hearing the overture, just how powerful of a soundtrack it was going to be. You could literally hear the chills that are going up and down your spine as this score plays.
It's one of those things that in every Quentin Tarantino movie, you can expect, or you've come to expect that because of the standard he set in Pulp Fiction. But this, to me, was the best sound design and best score and best music elements and how everything integrated in his movies ever, since Pulp Fiction at least. It just,
yeah.
I agree with you. Some could argue, and I've heard it said, and they're usually people that are like, I want things to start now. Oh, the intro, the overture went on a little bit long. Shut up. It was fucking awesome.
It was. It was like being in the 50s and 60s watching movies with intermissions and stuff. Yeah. Hell, you know what? I want more movies to have intermissions because, let's face it, sitting at a movie theater for 3.5 hours without going to the bathroom is a chore.
He's helping. Help me help you. Help me help you, says Quentin Tarantino. He's trying to help us. And I love him for it. And he's... I know this isn't the director's category, and we're talking about the original score, and we're talking about Ennio Morricone. Is that
I think it's either Ennio Morricone or Morricone.
Morricone. We're talking about their performance and their original score. But Quentin Tarantino, God fucking damn, he's just so exceptionally awesome. If it wasn't for someone in the world named Martin Scorsese, he would be my favorite director.
Yeah.
And it's just that I think Martin Scorsese as a director is a little more focused on narrative. And that means a little bit more to me, whereas Quentin Tarantino is more focused on dialogue driven and his own amusement rather than in making himself laugh or making you feel like you understand him better.
Exactly. With Tarantino, like, he knows what his set audience is, and it's always that set audience who goes and sees his films. But with Scorsese, who will do something like Hugo for kids, and then in the next film, you'll see Leo DiCaprio snorting cocaine off of a hooker's ass in The Wolf of Wall Street.
One of my favorite of Scorsese's movies, by the way.
No, Wolf of Wall Street was brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant. That was the realization moment, King, when, and I know we're going on, but whatever, we're talking about the Oscars here, was my realization moment. And I know it may seem late after King's comedy, Mean Street, Goodfellas, because everything he's done in his career, to finally at Wolf of Wall Street come to grips with, he's the greatest director of all time. You just can't. Even Quentin Tarantino is sitting somewhere watching this going, damn. He's so good. And I think they're 1 and 1A in a lot of ways for me. And Quentin Tarantino is a different animal because he also is an excellent writer, and he has a lot of great people that work with him and help punch up and create that Tarantino feel. But I'm just saying, like, as a just straight director and everything that they put on screen, Coen Brothers are up there, too. They're in that category.
Absolutely. Which, by the way, I am really looking forward to Hail Caesar. That looks like a really funny film.
I'm super excited for that. And, excuse me, I'm just super... We're really lucky here, and I hope Quentin Tarantino doesn't do something stupid like retire because he hates this whole experience with everything, and he thinks everyone's against him. So I just hope we have years and years more to come of Quentin Tarantino.
I hope so too.
Because you get things like this score, and it's a score in the sound. To bring it back to what we were talking about, the score and all of that, the things you get in Quentin Tarantino movies, you can't get. No one else is doing that. No one else is even trying to do that.
Because what I like about Tarantino is when he puts a song to a film, every time you hear that song afterwards, you automatically think of that scene.
Yeah, I can't even listen to the Cypress Hill song, Hits from the Bong, anymore without thinking of Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, absolutely. Or Stuck in the Middle with You. You can't listen to that without thinking about the guy cutting the cop's ear off.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I can't say enough great things. And I know we use this as an opportunity to go on a Quentin Tarantino and Hateful Eight rant here, but I feel like that movie needed to get a little bit more love. And we'll get to that when we get a little further up on our list here.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, okay, we have up here makeup and hairstyling. You know what? Mad Max Fury Road.
Mad Max Fury Road. I mean, that one isn't even a question.
Best foreign language film. I saw none of these.
Oh, no, none of them.
Film editing, I'm going to give that to Mad Max Fury Road as well.
Okay, film editing, what do we get? The Big Short, Mad Max, The Revenant, oh, Spotlight. That's not fair with... Okay, I think I need to give it to The Revenant. I just love the way he edits his movies. I just love this guy. I love Birdman. It's not him, yeah. Though. It's... Oh, yeah. I guess it's probably the same editor that worked with him the last time. I guess I need to give... I really love... And I know a lot of people, my co-host on my Phil's Recap and Review, Joe Dirty Locks, hates this guy's movies. Hates his movies. And hates The Revenant. Hated Birdman even worse.
How could you hate Birdman?
He hated the whole concept of the never-ending shot and everything like that. I think this is one of the best...
I don't like artsy stuff.
Exactly. I just think that this team is almost like the Vince Gilligan, who's the guy that did Breaking Bad of the movies right now. This unknown that I think he and his team are going to go on to create some of the best movies that we're going to see in the next 10 years. And I just want to lay my claim now here and give this award to The Revenant, just because I really enjoyed the way it was edited together.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Let's see. Documentary short. Didn't see any of those. Documentary feature. Didn't see any of those.
But I do have to give credit to Netflix original, or not Netflix original. William Shatner did a really awesome Netflix documentary on the Star Trek The Next Generation era, and how like the first season had like more writers than any television show ever. It's a really cool documentary on Netflix that came out this year, and you have to give some also respect, even though it's television, not movies, to Making a Murderer, that's getting a lot of attention as documentary this year too. So.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Although I'm one of those people that's kind of refusing to watch Making a Murderer, not because I know it's awesome, but it's one of those shows that I know is just going to make me angry.
Dude, I hear
and furious.
I didn't listen to the podcast Serial until this past year, until Christmas of this year, like a year later. I'm like, okay, I guess it's finally time to listen to Serial, for the same reason, because I knew it would kind of get under my goat, but then I kind of got into that type of storytelling and documentary, so I wanted to see more of it, and then I just happened to watch the first episode of Making a Murder and get into all of that. But I'm sure we're going to talk about that more when we get to our announcement at the end of the show about the second half of this podcast.
Okay. So we're now over on Best Director. So we have Adam McKay for The Big Short, George Miller for Mad Max Fury Road, Alonso G. that guy for The Revenant.
I'm glad you did that. Notice how when I was talking about him and his team, I kept saying him and his team, because I didn't want to try to do that. But yes, keep going.
We have Lenny Abrahamson for The Room, or regular Room. No, not The Room. No, not The Room. And then we have totally different movie. And then we have Tom McCarthy for Spotlight.
Oh gosh. Okay, this is a tough one, King, because I have my want and I have my think. My think is that it's going to Tom McCarthy for Spotlight. That's what I think is going to happen. If it was for me, it would be Alejandro, I'm gone, I'm not going to kill your name, for The Revenant, or George Miller for Mad Max.
No, I'm in the same boat as well, because I know Spotlight's a good film, although I feel like it's... Because I read the Boston Globe, and to see the Boston Globe give a 4-star review about a movie about the Boston Globe,
Yeah, it's a little weird. It's like farmers that chop up eggshells and feed them to the chickens. There's a little weirdness going on there. It's weird.
But I know it's a good movie.
I think we're a little biased just because of the Boston focus of it. Just a little bit because it's about the Boston Globe. I know about all that. And we kind of went through it. And I heard it described by another reviewer. I'll give full credit, Double Toasted. If you were in on this and you knew what was going on for a long time, it didn't really – it just reaffirmed things you already knew. It was more of a discovery movie, and if someone had been clueless of a lot of this stuff and just discovering it, it was good. It was even better for that type of person, if that makes any sense.
Yes. But for me, my wish is I would like to see George Miller win for Mad Max Fury Road. As much as I would love to also see The Revenant win for Best Director – I would just like to, for once, see a movie like Mad Max Fury Road get some credit.
It would be a good standard to be set. Yeah. I agree with what you're saying there, in the sense of there's no reason in me, and I don't think he did. I think the only one that won was Heath Ledger, that Christopher Nolan should have won for Best Director for The Dark Knight.
Agreed. I couldn't agree more with that. And Dark Knight should have been nominated for Best Picture that year.
It should have been nominated for Best Picture, and Christopher Nolan should have won for Best Director. And I feel like this could be a good standard to set if something like Mad Max wins for Best Director. I agree with you. But I think that for me, hence what I was saying a few minutes ago, I would probably say The Revenant edges it out a little bit for me, but just because of what they did to make that movie and the fact he shot it all with natural light, so they can only shoot for so many hours per day, and what they put through the actors through, and that they all came out of that like they lost a few years of their life in that.
Yes, absolutely.
So I have to, I don't know, there's some Aronofsky love is connected to my love for this guy.
Yes, totally. Okay, so let's move up to costume design, and I grin when I give it to Mad Max Fury Road for that, because blindfolded man playing a flame-throwing guitar. No, none of these other films had that.
It's hard to... I'm trying to scroll through my list here. And I'm pretty sure I had Mad Max as well. It's tough to refute. And you look at some of these other that are on these lists. Carol, I ended up seeing Carol, and I wasn't impressed. Cinderella, no. What the fuck are you even doing there?
Just say, too, how I thought it was a really bad move for Disney to release Cinderella just a couple months after Into the Woods?
Yeah, that was really stupid. It was like, come on. I agree with you. And as much as The Revenant was cool for costume design, it doesn't deserve this award. It wasn't the creative one. Goes down, Mad Max, hands down.
Absolutely. Okay, cinematography. We have Carol, The Hateful Eight, Mad Max Fury Road, The Revenant, and Sicario. And I'm going with The Hateful Eight. I'm going with The Hateful Eight for the cinematography, considering the fact that they resurrected this old technology, the whole 70mm look, and seeing it on the big screen, just every shot of it looking just so goddamn beautiful.
Oh, I can't... I want to try to... No, you're right. It's The Hateful Eight. It really is. The best cinematography, again, that's something that... It's a staple of Tarantino's movies, and it's the repeated thing that people say about someone like Patrick Stewart. Oh, I could listen to him read the dictionary, and it would make you feel good.
Yeah.
I could watch Tarantino frame two people in a coffee shop sitting and talking for 2 hours. I mentioned this in a different podcast somewhere, that I'd love to see Tarantino do his version of Waiting for Godot. That's just... like, it's the only... Like, adapt that screenplay. Do an adapted screenplay of Quentin Tarantino brings you Waiting for Godot. I would love the way that he would find a way with his team and his cinematography to shoot that and the way it would look. So I have to give it to The Hateful Eight just to give them as many awards as they can get.
Absolutely. Considering they got the short end of the stick in some of these nominations, too.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, so best animated feature film. So we have Anomalisa, Boy in the World, Inside Out, Shaun the Sheep, the movie, and When Marnie Was There. And let me just say this, because people are just going to automatically assume, I'm going to go with the anime pick. When Marnie Was There was one of the weakest Studio Ghibli films ever released. It should not be nominated. Their Minions should be in here. The Peanuts movie should be in here.
Dude, you took the words right out of my fucking list. I have... Okay, I'm giving it to Inside Out. It's... Okay, let's just get that out of the way. We both like Inside Out.
Yeah, Inside
okay.
Out.
Okay, what the fuck is the Peanuts movie not doing here?
No.
Like what the shit? They were doing new animated work mixed with the... Like whatever you want to say about that, a lot of people, I've heard it say, oh, it isn't Charles Schultz, so it's fan fiction, or it's, you know...
No, it's not. It took actual source material. The way that the movie looks, it just... It looks like the actual comic coming to life.
It looks like nothing I've ever seen before in my life, and it doesn't even get a fucking nomination. And these Inside Out, obviously it wins. I'd say it would even beat the Peanuts movie if the Peanuts movie was in there, but I'm talking about a nomination. I personally haven't seen any of these other movies. So and I've seen a lot of animated movies this year, and I mean, maybe I'm just a big fan of everything that Bruce Timm puts out from his creative team, from Warner Brothers. I'm a big fan of some of the stuff we'll see on Netflix movies and straight to Netflix animated movies, so I watch a lot of that stuff. But some of this stuff, you could just tell this is highbrow bullshit that shouldn't even be on here. The Peanuts movie isn't nominated. That pissed me. That was one of the things that pissed me off.
No, same here. Because when that movie came out, I said, this is going to win the Oscar. Because number one, you got the nostalgia factor. Everybody loves Charlie Brown. Charlie Brown is a representation of what America is and should be. It feels like it goes against everything that America's cinema stands for, that the Peanuts movie isn't nominated.
And I want to point this out and make it very clear in case people are thinking, oh, you guys, what the fuck? Your remakes suck. You're one of those people that just like all remakes suck. You're talking to two people that hate fucking reboots and remakes and probably went into seeing the Peanuts with a little bit of, okay. Like, I was so dubious. I mean, the first couple of trailers almost sold me on the style, but I was still like, okay, you got, show me here. Show me. They had to prove something to me. I went in there, won, and I know some people say, oh, if you go in there wanting to hate it, they're easier to like it. That's not always the case.
No.
I go into a lot of movies thinking I'm going to hate it, and I freaking hate it. Point Break. Well, you go in there and you just think that this is going to be a piece of shit, and it is a piece of shit. I went into the Peanuts movie thinking, this isn't my Peanuts. This isn't my Peanuts. Oh, it's my Peanuts, you know? Oh my goodness, it's my Peanuts! And I just got so freaking excited, and it's such a shame, and as it may seem trivial that we're getting bent out of shape and hot and bothered about this, considering the fact that it wouldn't have even been our winner, I think I still would have given it to Inside Out, because I think Inside Out should be nominated as Best Picture of the Year, but it deserved to be nominated.
Yeah. I would definitely take out when Marty was there and replace that with the Peanuts movie. Mm. Absolutely. Like, I'm so shocked that actually got nominated. Like, my friends from Wicked Anime and I, and from Scarlet Rhapsody, we walked out of that film, was like, that was not good. That was just really boring.
Was that one of those movies that, for someone, that you guys walk out and you guys being three, like, really passionate, or four probably people that were going, but real passionate about anime, and seeing that and thinking, this is why people don't like anime. It was one of those movies?
No, it wasn't like anything like that. This is like, Studio Ghibli is like the top tier of like Japanese animated movies, because that's like Porco Rosso, Spirited Away, Howl's Moving Castle, Ponyo, The Wind Rises, My Neighbor Totoro. This is all Studio Ghibli. Graves of Fireflies, that's Studio Ghibli. To see a film like When Marnie Was There be released by Studio Ghibli and it being just below mediocre usually make.
So this is the Cars 2 from that studio.
This is the Cars 2 from Studio Ghibli. Okay, I can't think of a better analogy than that.
I totally get it now. So it's just like, wait a second, what's going on here? You guys don't usually come up with stuff like this. Okay, so I get it. it goes to Inside Out.
Yes, Inside Out. All right, so now we got the acting roles. So for Best Supporting Actress, Jennifer Jason Leigh for The Hateful Eight, Rooney Mara for Carol, Rachel McAdams for Spotlight, Alicia Vikander, or however you say that, for Danish Girl, and Kate Winslet for Steve Jobs. I'm a... The Hateful Eight. Jennifer Jason Leigh just owned that role.
She did, and she deserves it. I'm a big comeback actor, comeback actress type person, so I think she really does deserve this attention and to get the focus on her in this award show. I'd really love to see her get it. I don't think that anybody else. I think Rachel McAdams was really good in Spotlight, but I don't think her part was expansive enough in the movie to really warrant her winning this award. I think it's appreciative to her that they gave her a nomination for this, but I think supporting is really reaching. It's almost she's a supporting actress, but her part's very, very small.
But when you look at, I'm actually surprised that Jennifer Jason Leigh just got a supporting role because the fact that she's in every single scene.
She's huge. A great point, King, and that's why I ultimately have to. And that's kind of what I was getting at there. That's why I ultimately have to give it to Jennifer Jason Leigh, because she just put so much into this role. Kate Winslet always does excellent work, and she did an excellent job in a Jobs movie I didn't enjoy. she was really good in it. I didn't see the Danish Girl, as I mentioned, and so I didn't really enjoy Carol. So I have to. Jennifer Jason Leigh really surprised the hell out of me. It was really great to see her, someone I had a crush on when I was a kid. So I always have a sort of connection to her. And so it was really great to see this from her, and excellent performance. She deserves it.
Absolutely. Because she played a character that she was just scum in this movie, but she was just like a scum that you could laugh at, scum that you could cheer when you finally see her hang.
Truly, truly a memorable character, and something I'm going to be talking about for years to come. That being said, we haven't done this for every category, but we'll do it for the actors and the actresses one. That being said, I think it's probably going to go to either Kate Winslet or Alicia Vikander from The Danish Girl. They seem to be getting the most whatever bullshit that they're probably going to win the awards, but we will see.
Yep. So now we got, after a supporting role, we have Batman, Bane, The Incredible Hulk, Mark Rylance, and Sylvester Stallone.
And Rambo.
And Rambo, yes.
Give Tango and Cash his rightful start there. Give Judge Dredd his respect.
Exactly.
Holy shit. This is one of the most difficult situations that I'm going to say here, and I think it's a common feeling that people are getting right now. He's in a category with people I think are all better actors than he is, but I have to give it to Sylvester Stallone. His performance really moved me in the movie. I feel like Creed was probably one of my favorite movies this year. So in Sly, it's not that Sly surprised me. I think that's what the thing that's shocking me, where people are like, oh, he surprises me. Sly's not a bad actor. No one ever thought he was a bad actor.
No, he's really good in this movie. He's been great on a lot of movies.
He was great in movies before Rocky and parts before Rocky. He was great in Rocky 1 and 2, and then 3 and 4 were crap, and 5 was crap, and then Rocky Balboa was a great performance. The new Rambo movie was a great performance. Expendables, shitty performances, a lot of awful 80s stuff, but he's always good in his movies, whether it's Oscar in the 80s, where it's kind of a comedy role, Tango and Cash I mentioned earlier, it's a fun role, Copland, one of my favorite of his performances.
Oh yeah, very underrated performance from Sylvester Stallone in that movie.
When someone pushes Slide work, he works. And when you have someone like Michael B. Jordan giving an Oscar-winning performance for his role in that movie, in Creed, and he's really pushing Sly to another level, Sly can give performances like this. I really didn't love The Big Short. I think Christian Bale is amazing, but it wasn't one of my favorite things I've seen this year. Tom Hardy was good in The Revenant, but he wasn't as important as Leonardo DiCaprio was in that movie. And Tom Hardy is excellent in everything he's in, but wasn't one of my favorite of his performances.
Right. And in my honest opinion, I feel like he was nominated for the wrong movie. I feel like he should have got it for Mad Max.
Good point. Very good point. And I have to say, the only other person that I would consider this in this category is Mark Ruffalo. I think he owned in Spotlight. I thought he was excellent in that movie. But this is Sylvester Stallone. Is there any doubt Sly's going to win this?
No, I don't think there's any doubt whatsoever that he's going to win this award.
Yeah, this is the big one for Sly, and it's the Oscars and award shows in general are a little predictable, like an 80s movie in some ways, and they like to balance things out, and they want to balance out the fact that he won an award for Rocky and now he's going to win an award X amount of years later for this, and they're going to want to balance that out, and that's what they do. so I think even if he didn't give a great, which I think he deserves it, especially on this list, I think out of all these people, and I didn't say anything about Mark Rylance from Bridge of Spies, it wasn't memorable to me. I think, to me, this is down to Sly, Ruffalo, and you could argue Hardy, too, but I don't think it's one of Hardy's best performances.
No, I agree.
And so I give it to Sly.
Sly for best actor in a supporting role. Now let's go up to actors in a leading role, and this is hard because I have not seen any of these movies.
Dude, I'm so glad you said this. This was one of the things that was giving me most anxiety before our show today, because I don't like coming unprepared. And I'm like, I don't know really. Like,
I mean, they're saying a lot of great things about Brie Larson in Room. And you know what? I'm actually surprised. Here's a snub. Sarah Silverman in I Smile Back.
Yeah, she was awesome in that movie. Since I obviously don't know the movie Brooklyn, even though I thought I did, but let's see. I guess I have to give it to Brie Larson just because I want to be right about one.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of these picks that we're choosing, they're very wishful thinking, but I think Brie Larson's the one that's probably going to win.
Yes.
All right, so now go into actor in a leading role. We've got Bryan Cranston as Trumbo, Matt Damon in The Martian. We got Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant, Michael Fassbender and Steve Jobs, and then Eddie Redmayne in The Danish Girl. And you know, okay, so I just want to first say it would be awesome to see Bryan Cranston win Best Actor so he could be one away from an EGOT.
But he's not going to win.
No.
Yeah, he's not going to win.
No.
He's not going to win.
No, he is not going to win. As much as it would be really cool to see him win, because he did start out as an anime voice actor. For him to go from anime voice actor to one of the biggest actors of all time and to walk away with an Oscar, that would be cool, but it's not going to happen here.
I really hope Bryan Cranston, this is completely sidebar, but I really do hope, and I know he's voiced him in animated shorts before, but I really do hope Bryan Cranston one day gets to play Commissioner Gordon in a Batman property.
Who's playing Gordon in the Batman versus Superman?
I don't know. I don't even know if Gordon's in that movie, but I know there's going to be a Affleck-directed Batman trilogy, and if they haven't cast Gordon yet, I would love for them to cast Bryan Cranston. One of the weird things in, what is it, Arkham Knight, where you have a Commissioner Gordon that looks an awful lot like Bryan Cranston, but it has the voice of Mike from Breaking Bad, so it's really awkward.
Absolutely.
But I agree with you, King. I think Bryan Cranston, I'd love to see him do this, but I mean, it's not going to happen. Do we have any doubt who this is? This is the Leonardo DiCaprio.
Leo DiCaprio is going to win the Oscar for this.
If anyone beats him, it would be Matt Damon, maybe.
Because Matt Damon was great in that movie.
He was, and he is. People love Matt Damon. So, if there is some people out there that want to keep punishing Leonardo DiCaprio because he was the star of Growing Pains, growing. Oh my God! Sorry, I don't know what the fuck just happened there.
Did your computer freeze?
I just mean he is the star of Growing Pains. I don't know what the hell happened there. A thousand voices started speaking at once, yelling Growing Pains. That did not mean to happen. Holy shit. But yeah, sorry, I'll do that again. I'll say that again just in case you can use that one. But I would say, yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio, unless there is some contingent of people that want to punish him for his work on Growing Pains.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Okay, so we got the final one. For best picture.
Yep, here we go. Okay, before we get into our picks for best picture, I think to me, there are three big, huge mother bleeping snubs for here. Even though I said Straight Outta Compton was one of my favorite movies, I understand why it wasn't nominated, but I did mention it at the beginning. Yes. I also need to mention that I'm surprised in that I feel like Creed was one of the best movies this year and deserved a nomination over, I don't know. I haven't seen some of them, so I'm like, I don't know.
Maybe over Brooklyn.
Maybe over Brooklyn, maybe over Room. I don't know. And also, it's the biggest one is our winner for Best Animated Movie. That I think that deserved to be there. I really do think it deserved to be there. Inside Out deserved to be on this list.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about Star Wars? Do you think that got a snub?
For Best Picture? Oh, gosh, I don't think it's a perfect movie, so it's hard for me. I think People's Choice Awards, Golden Globes, I think it kind of maybe got a snub for not Best Picture. I don't think it deserves to win the Best Picture for the Oscar. No.
Okay.
Personally, do you?
Maybe a little bit of a nomination. I think it kind of deserved it because it really brought back the whole Star Wars universe to what it should have been.
It's a good point, and it's the highest grossing movie, which I know people go, oh, it doesn't fucking matter, but it matters a little bit. I feel like I'm looking at director here. Looking down at director. Did JJ deserve it for directing? Did he do an excellent job bringing life back into Star Wars? I don't know if it deserved Best Picture, but I do agree that in some ways it deserved a little bit more recognition than it got.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and I don't know if it deserved Best Director nod either. I don't know. It's hard to say, but okay, it couldn't have hurt to have it nominated, considering I think The Big Short is getting a little bit of big hype, and I don't think it deserves to necessarily be on this list for Best Picture. No, Bridget Spies was very good and a very good Oscar type movie that's going to be there on the Oscar list. Brooklyn, I didn't see, so I can't really make a honest to good speculation. Mad Max is the surprise. I guess the Academy probably said it's going to be either Mad Max or Star Wars. Mad Max is a better movie, so let's pick Mad Max. The Martian definitely deserved there. The Revenant definitely deserved there. I don't know much about The Room, so I can't speak to that. I guess Spotlight.
Let's just say it again. It's Room, not The Room.
I know. I'm sorry. I have to say that every time. So I feel like there's a lot of movies that should have been in here before Star Wars. I guess that's what I have to say
about okay, that. That's a good reason. But for me, you know, I kind of do want to see Mad Max walk away.
I didn't even give my pick. Okay, I'm sorry. My pick is The Revenant. Probably The Revenant.
Okay, so The Revenant for you. And I know it's wishful thinking. It's probably not going to win. I do want to see Mad Max Fury Road walk away with it. A part of me thinks it might go to The Martian or either Room, but I just really want to see something like Mad Max Fury Road win Best Picture, because movies like Mad Max Fury Road rarely ever get the respect that they deserve.
100% King Baby Duck. And the only thing I have to say about my pick is that's my favorite on this list, or that it's very close. Or my favorite on the list is Mad Max, but The Martian, and The Revenant are really close to what I would think was the best picture of the year on this particular list. But the winner is probably going to be Spotlight.
You think it'll be Spotlight? Really?
I think so. The Spotlight, I don't know. I just have a weird feeling that might be the year for that, a movie like that.
Okay. Yeah, that's...
But we will see.
We will see, because when are the Oscars going to be held? It is on February 28th, so we've got over a month before we find out if any of our predictions are going to be right.
And maybe you and I, King Baby Duck, can come back on an episode of your show afterwards, since I'm not going to be able to really do a live stream of it, and talk about our picks and talk about the winners and what we think. A quick podcast about our reactions to the winners after the fact.
You know what? That's a great idea. Would you rather we do it here on No Borders, No Race, or do you want me to be invading your podcast for once?
Let's do it on No Borders, No Race, because of the special announcement of the second half of this is when the Emmys come around, and I think it's September that the Emmys are around. We're going to do this same thing on my on the Recap Nation over there on the Issues program. So King's going to be joining me for the Emmys on my stuff. So you can subscribe to all my crap when you hear me do my pubs at the end to check that out. And we're way in advance. So
we'll very, very in advance.
We're way in advance. But so let's do, let's just complete the second part here and then do the same thing with the Emmys on my channel.
Absolutely. You know what? That sounds like a great idea. So, Phil, thank you again so much for joining me here on No Borders Erased. Where can our lovely listeners find out more information on your stuff?
Thank you, as always, King. You can always check out issuesprogram.com to find sort of all my stuff all aggregated in one place. But if you search Phil the Issues Guy on Google, the first thing that will come up would be the YouTube page, Phil's Recap and Review. If you search Phil the Issues Guy, you will find it. That's if you subscribe there and see when my podcasts go live and join us for all our recap discussions and some of my silly videos and speculation theory stuff coming there. You can also follow me on Twitter at IGetIssuesMan. Check me out on Facebook, Phil's Recap and Review. I am also on Instagram at IGetIssuesMan. Lots of other little places. If you search I Got Issues Man in a lot of places, or just Google Phil the Issues Guy, you'll find me in all those ridiculous locations. Don't look at the photos on the second page of the search. You don't want to see them.
Oh yeah, those are kind of awkward pictures.
Yeah, I know. Don't look at that.
Alright, Phil, thank you again for joining me on this episode.
Thank you, always, King.
So here's a track from The Oral Cigarettes' new album, who some of you may be familiar with, thanks to the anime Noragami Arigoto. From Fixion, this is Stay One.
You
TM Revolution with his single Resonance, known to some of our anime fans as the opening theme to Soul Eater, one of my favorite series of the last decade. Well, that about wraps up this episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastion Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have anything for our friend Sawa Sensei for her Nazo Nazo Nyongo segment, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can find me on Twitter at king_baby_duck, on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, and on Anime Amino at kingbabyduckesh. Like us on Facebook.com/Boston Bastion Brigade and on Facebook.com/Land of Esh. For all our other sites, please be sure to visit The Electric Sisterhood, Phil's Recap and Review, Smash Rook, The Structure Network, and Nerd Crave, our new buddies under the Land of Esh. Special thanks to Angeline Weiss from Adult Swim for setting up our interview with Big Pixel Studios. You're always super awesome, Angie. And once again, a great shout out to Phil for helping out with the Oscar stuff. So, as we started the show with a farewell from Bowie, I figured I'd make it more appropriate and have the podcast end with something of his that was filled with life. A kind of life that will never flicker away in this windy universe we live in. From my favorite album of his, Reality, this is David Bowie once more with New Killer Star. Until next time, this is King Baby Duck reminding you that you should keep on looking out at the stars above, because Major Tom is looking down at us right now. Guys, this is Evan Borgo from the Electric Sisterhood and host of the No Borders, No Race podcast. What you hear each week on our show is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed something from this week's selections, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, or your local record store to help give these artists your support. We always give our readers and listeners the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun. So if something resonated with you, give that album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help to bring your favorite J-pop artist one step closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.